I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Spring migration is in full swing. Here to talk about that and more is Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Ah, I love that sound.
Yay, it's May. That's what the birders are all saying.
And it's finally starting to feel like, well, spring.
I know. It's so great. It's such a great time of year. Even though you can feel that heavy, wet cold, that easterly, ocean-smelling cold this morning. You know, we're 15 degrees cooler than Boston, but it's, you know, that we're used to it and we love it. And everything, the oaks are finally flowering. The shad bushes or service berries are blooming everywhere. As you drive around, you can see these little, spindly little but beautiful trees with white flowers inside the woods as you drive around. That's shad bush. It's an awesome time of year.
Now, do you think that the birds really seem happy, or is it because we're happy? We just think the birds seem happy.
A lot of this is projecting.
Exactly.
We project our emotions onto the birds.
We want them to be happy, so we are going to say they're happy.
They're more hormonal.
true, right?
Yeah, the day length, and then combine that with warming temperatures, and all of a sudden they're just feeling pretty lusty. They're singing more often, and they're ready. They're ready for spring. And a lot of the local birds are building nests. I'm watching a pair of titmice building a nest in my nest box in my yard. It's all packed with moss. It looks very soft. It looks like it's going to be a very comfortable nest.
It is so exciting when you find a nest in your yard and get to watch that. And Amy, she and her son, they found a robin's nest by the they're not able to use the front door right now because they're giving the robin
move
space.
Out.
That's right.
Good for them. Yeah, that's great. I love when I hear those stories. They're like, we don't use the back door anymore because of the house finches nesting or whatever.
I used to see house finches on my front porch all the time, but the wreath is gone now, so I don't see them there as much. And sometimes, and I don't have a plant out there yet because everything's starting so late, sometimes they would even nest inside the hanging plant that I put on the front porch.
That's classic, yeah.
But it's so fun to watch them fledge. And it's like, but you're constantly watching going, is today? When, you know, and sometimes you miss it, and sometimes you're lucky enough to watch that happen.
That's a great thing to do with kids. I mean, it's right on your own back porch, and that's why house finches are fun. Carolina wrens, too. They'll nest around houses and in-house. There are stories of Carolina wrens nesting in houses if people leave the window open at the wrong time of year. wreaths. And hanging plants, those are classic for house finches.
Right. And you know, and wanting not to miss that, Amy's son said, maybe Huey would let us borrow the osprey cam.
The less compelling house finch cam.
I don't know,
it might get a lot of followers.
Yeah. All right, so I guess the big excitement for warbler fans is the warblers that are, as you say, flooding in.
Right. I mean, and May is when they're in full breeding plumage and they're singing, and you just get the whole display, you know, for all the senses. Maybe not all the senses. I'm not sure what they smell like, but but yeah, warblers are coming through, and you get a trickle of them. You get hints of them in late April. You know, a little bit of warm air brings in a few. We had some early confused-looking migrants a few weeks ago. Tanagers and grosbeaks and things that you would normally expect like after the first week in May. So that was a little taste. But now it's the real deal, right? I mean, orioles are back, hummingbirds are back, warblers are coming through. You know, we're talking about 30 species of very colorful little birds. And the average person is not going to notice them coming through because they're little. They often have high-pitched songs that don't sound like much.
And they look similar.
They look similar. But the good thing about the Cape is because our trees leaf out so much later than the mainland, you know, our oaks just started flowering. And that's the key thing for the warblers, because the oaks are probably the most important tree for them overall. And so once the oaks start flowering and the leaves start budding, then the little caterpillars that fuel them as they pass through in migration are out. The little caterpillars that eat the flowers and the budding leaves. Things like winter moth and other closely related little green caterpillars. I mean, those are hugely important food for these birds. So now that our oaks are flowering, they have food, they're keying in on those flowering oaks, and the oaks haven't leafed out, so you can see them, right? So we have a good chance of seeing, you know, a Blackburnian warbler or, you know, any of these other warblers that are, you know, chestnut-sided. They're all beautiful, bay-breasted. Later on in the next couple of weeks, bay-breasteds will come through, and if you're lucky enough to see one of those, it's just an intensely beautiful work of art, you know.
Oh.
But they're... three and a half, you know, they're like 4 inches long.
Yes,
you know,
well,
they're mm-hmm. so, and they move quick. So, you know, you need your binoculars and you need to kind of be looking for them and listening for them.
And now, is the best place really to see warblers up in Provincetown? Is that that area of, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they can be everywhere. There are flowering oaks, like I said. So don't think like, oh, the warblers are at the beech forest in Provincetown. That's a good place because it's sort of the last stop, right? It's kind of hanging out there in the ocean. And so it sort of catches birds as they come in. And it's also one of the more mature forests. You have big oaks and beech trees. And
it's a pretty place to walk.
It's swampy. There are red maples. And one of the key things there is the flowering willows. Mm. Those start flowering in April and drawing in a lot of the early migrants. Really right in the parking lot of the beech forest in Provincetown is where you get a lot of the nice birds. And there's been like an influx of southern warblers for some reason in the last week or so. Hooded warbler, which doesn't breed this far north, but we get some overshoots. In other words, they flew too far north. They got a little excited, right? I'm flying north to breed.
Oops.
And wait a minute, I'm in New England. I meant to stop in Raleigh. and so there have been several sightings of hooded warblers, but the real jewel. Not really. It's kind of a drab-looking warbler. But the rarest southern warbler that showed up recently is a Swainson's warbler, a really obscure, it's not even common in their breeding range. They breed in these bottomland canebrake forests in the southeastern U.S. And it's a drab warbler, kind of brownish, olivey, you know, olivey drab brown, with darker cap and a white eyeline. And they skulk around in the leaf litter. But to a birder, I mean, this is a rare jewel because there are very few records. Mm-hmm. And there's one at Santuit Pond in Mashpee right now. So birders have been flocking there to
check it out.
Yeah. And so it's a life bird for a lot of people, even avid birders who, you know, haven't traveled to the southeast for birding. They probably haven't seen one of these. And so this is a new species for a lot of people. So they're chasing this guy down.
Right. You mentioned Baltimore Orioles, and of course, hummingbirds are back, and seeing a lot of that on Facebook and a lot of chatter about, you know, when the hummingbirds are here, and you want to know what, they're going to a lot of people's feeders, but what flowers are they going to? Are you
right.
Looking to plant some more stuff in your yard? Is that why you want to know?
Yeah, always. I'm obsessed with native plant gardening, pollinator gardening. We're redoing our pollinator garden at the sanctuary right now. I've just been obsessing about plants and researching mm-hmm. native plants and things like that. And everybody says columbine is mm-hmm. great for hummingbirds. And so I bought some of that. I actually had it out on my deck before I planted it to see if I could lure some in. But they just go right to the feeders.
Yeah.
There we go. There's a ruby-throated hummingbird buzzing around.
Yeah.
How to get in the studio?
I know how to get in here.
Hey, open a door.
and coral bells was another one that people.
Yeah, this is what I hear. Coral bells is a plant that people have. The native version is called American alum root. Most people have, you know, whatever nursery varieties and hybrids they mm-hmm. sell at your local nurseries. Pretty similar. But, you know, I've heard that hummingbirds go to those little flowers. I'm just curious if people have seen that. I mean, they just go straight to my feeders.
Mm.
Someone is saying. Solomon seal, really?
Jewelweed.
Yeah, jewelweed blooms later on. They love jewelweed. Touch me not is another name for jewelweed. But that's more of a summer bloomer. That and cardinal flower are probably their two favorite native plants.
All right, so people who are watching hummingbirds in the yard, what flowers are you seeing your hummingbirds go to? 866-999-4626. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, we have David and Dennis says, we have a pair of chickadees nesting in a bluebird box, rough cedar, both sides. They've been frequently pecking inside the box. The pecking sounds like a woodpecker and is loud enough to be heard clear across the yard. Any idea what they're up to?
No. Excuse me. Chickadees, even though they're tiny and they have that tiny little bill, they can excavate their own cavity. Titmice can't. They both nest in cavities. But titmice, you know, for whatever reason, just are lazy and they use other people, uh-huh. other birds' cavities, you know, something that was excavated by a woodpecker or maybe a chickadee. But chickadees can't excavate a fresh cavity of their own.
So maybe that's what they're up to?
Yeah, but this is already a nest box. Yeah. I don't know what, I mean, they just don't like the dimensions inside. They're putting on an addition. I mean, I don't know what they're doing, but there's something that they're looking to rearrange inside, or maybe...
Could there be little bugs in the wood or something? Could they be just pecking at, trying to get some little creatures in the wood there?
No, not really. I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that's what they're doing. If they're inside a nest box, they're nesting, but...
Well, I guess we've just got some unusual little chickadees in there.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, I love the chickadees. Okay, so as you know, a couple weeks ago, we were out at the sanctuary, my husband and grandson and I.
Oh, that's right.
And he, so cute, we were walking the trails, but sort of birding. He's just beginning with this. He had his binoculars, his noculars. He's three, noculars around his neck. And he was hoping to see what he called my best bird. Hope I see my best bird. Like, what is your best bird? Please don't say penguin or something we have no chance of seeing. Robin.
Oh, good.
So we have seen lots of robins since then. And every time he sees a robin, he says, it's my best bird.
I love that.
I'm so happy he chose a common bird that he could see.
Yeah, right. They're all the best bird.
Yeah, my best bird, the robin.
Best bird is the one you're seeing right now.
Yeah. But so he asked me what my best bird was. And I said, I don't know how to answer that because I like so many birds.
I know.
It's a really hard question.
Because we're adults. We overthink it.
Right. So he said that the robin should be my best bird, too.
Yeah. Good. It's settled.
It is, exactly. I don't know if you can see this photo. This is from Janet in Wellfleet. She said she took this picture, and she wonders if it's an orchard oriole.
She's right.
Ah,
yeah,
good.
It's a young male orchard oriole. It's got a black face. It's overall kind of a greenish yellow. They're a little smaller than a Baltimore oriole. You might confuse it with maybe a female Baltimore oriole. But yeah, they're increasingly common. Used to be really hard to find orchard orioles, but they've increased in recent years for whatever reason. And they're beautiful. If you go to the sanctuary in Wellfleet, Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, we have an oriole feeder out. And you can just sit there and both species of orioles come to it all day long, and you can, you know, work on the difference between the two. But a beautiful little bird that we only have for a few months, and then they're back to Central America. By the end of August, they're gone again.
Wow.
So they show up in May, and they're gone by the end of August.
And lots of Baltimore orioles around right now as well.
Yep, they're back. I mean, they're back by the first week in May is when they come back. And that, boy, that happy little song just really... Oh, there we go.
Boy, Dan is
right
on this
cue.
Morning. Wow.
Trigger man there.
Reading
the
our minds
sounds.
Of what birds we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
Right, let's talk to Carolyn, who's giving us a call from Marston's Mills. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning, Mindy. It's so lovely to hear this program. This past Sunday was so wet and gloomy, and I was blessed with a spectacular, brilliant indigo bunting.
Ooh,
nice.
Sat at the feeder all day. The feeder had been knocked over. Oh, it was kind of close to the ground, and he just was the happiest thing. He sat, he went up in the trees once in a while, then he came back and sat at that feeder and ate and ate and ate, and that spectacular blue, which I guess, according to experts, isn't really blue, but it looks brilliant blue, it was just a joy to behold.
Yeah, when you see something like that, you want to double take. Like, wait, what?
Oh man, there's nothing like a male indigo bunting. You're one of the lucky few, Carolyn. So,
I felt very lucky, believe me, on many levels. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Dan found a singing indigo bunting. Just
wow.
So their song kind of sounds like a goldfinch. You might confuse it with a goldfinch song, but it's more kind of divided up into individual little phrases. And not a common breeder here on the Cape, but you're likely to find them at, say, a landfill, the edges of a landfill or a gravel pit where current or old gravel pit where they'll sing from the trees at the edges, but not a really common bird. And to get them in migration at your feeder is a real treat. I mean, that color, it's so intense. I mean, there's nothing like it. And that was one of the birds that got blown in with this unusual event in mid-April, much earlier than you'd expect to see things like indigo bunting or blue grosbeak or scarlet tanager. And there they were, and they ended up at some people's feeders. But yeah, you don't see them at your feeders very often, and when you do, it's a real treat.
Yeah, Carolyn, thanks for sharing that, because that gives people hope. Maybe they'll get to see one too. You never know where that bird's going to go next. So Carolyn, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point, Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Wondering what kind of flowers are you seeing hummingbirds visit in your yard? And we got an email from Nancy who says, I put out my house plants and saw the hummingbird on this geranium. I don't have any bird feeders, but lots of garden and native habitat. We don't know if he was actually feeding on that geranium, though, right?
If it comes back more than once, and you can tell when they're feeding versus just kind of investigating it. And Mindy and I were just trying to figure out what this crazy-looking geranium.
I've never seen this.
You know, I'm familiar with certainly the houseplant types of geraniums.
Yeah, this one's got some like green and almost looks like a maroon kind of variegated leaves with red flowers.
Red flower, but it doesn't look like any geranium I've ever seen.
It's pretty.
It's a crazy one. Yeah, it's a nice-looking houseplant. I mean, sometimes they'll surprise you. They'll visit like petunias and things that probably don't really have any nectar. You know, these annuals. Most of the annuals you get at the nurseries don't have any nectar.
Yeah.
If you want to do annuals, grow your own zinnias.
Mm-hmm.
Hummingbirds like zinnias. Bees, butterflies, all love zinnias. And you know, you can do a late summer through frost butterfly, bee, and hummingbird garden, and if you have a little bit of space, for like $5 by picking up a few seed packets, growing zinnias, verbena. Mm-hmm. There's like a tall verbena that you can get that's really, really good for butterflies. I mean, these are exotic plants, but they're annuals. They're not going to go, you know, they're not invasive. They're just a thing you can grow in your yard cheap and, you know, feed some bees and butterflies and hummingbirds. Mexican sunflower is another one you can grow. These are basically South American plants that, you know, you grow from seed and that's it. Then you grow them again from seed the next year. But boy, and my wife grows the zinnias. I'm not, you know, I try to do native perennials.
Mm-hmm.
And she does the zinnias for cut flowers. And it was the best part of our yard last year when all these painted lady butterflies were coming through all fall. And they were covering these zinnias. The hummingbirds were visiting them regularly.
And you can take the seeds from your zinnias and plant them next year. You just buy them this year.
Yeah.
And then when your flowers go to seed, take those seeds, put them in a little envelope in the house, and there you go.
Yeah, I think you can do that with all of those.
Yeah.
And you know, people get impatiens and pansies and all that kind of stuff. None of those have any nectar for anything, you know.
Right.
But if you grow your own zinnias, and you know, they're beautiful. You can do cut flowers, and they keep blooming, and they're really good for pollinators.
All right, good to know. All right, let's talk to Joan, who's calling from East Harwich. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. Two flowers that not in bloom right now, but my horse chestnut tree. The hummers go to that all the time, and also morning glories. But yesterday, I spent an hour and a half watching a red-tailed hawk in my pine tree, sitting there. Grackles were flying around it, not attacking it. They were coming into the feeders. The squirrels were scampering up and down the deck, and I just sat there watching them. And a blue jay almost landed on it because the blue jay came in from behind it and was going for the branch that it was sitting on, and all of a sudden, the blue jay freaked out and turned around and ran off in the other direction. And the hawk ducked like, what the heck was that? And it was, I first saw it because I heard it thump onto the deck. And also my hummer came in on, and the catbird came in on the 1st of May.
Uh-huh.
I know it was last year's birds, and the orioles with last year's birds have come back also because they were looking for the feeders, and I hadn't gotten around to getting them out yet, and I got scolded roundly.
Oh, yeah.
Did they knock on the door?
Yeah, they're like, Joan, put it out.
Tap on the window.
Well, actually, the oriole almost did. It was on a plant hanger that I have out the kitchen, beside the kitchen window, and it landed on the hanger because that's where I put the feeder, and it's leaning in the window, and it's scolding me.
Yeah.
And And the Hummer was doing that U-shaped flight or J-shaped flight up and down in front of the kitchen window like, let's go, lady.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Yeah. You got to get those feeders out early enough or you're going to get a bad review on Bird Yelp.
Yes, because they usually come in like the middle of May, like Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And they were 2 weeks early.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah,
anyway,
my first hummingbirds have been all over the place. I've had them in late April. I've had them May 8th as my first. And then this year, I think it was the 3rd. But yeah, usually by the 1st of May, I always say April 15th. That's pretty ambitious.
Yeah.
But certainly the last 2 weeks of April is when the first few reports of hummingbirds come on the Cape. Usually from the 3rd week on, the first few scouts show up. So it's worth having your feeder out in late April. It's usually cool enough that you don't have to be changing it every few days.
Right.
You know, it's not going bad like it does in the summer. And so what the heck, you know?
Yeah.
Be optimistic.
Right. All right.
Yeah. Two other birds that came in are the great crested flycatcher and the towhee.
Oh.
Yes, the towhee's come in mid-April.
Yeah.
And, I just got my first great crested flycatcher, I think, 2 days ago.
Right.
It's a great sound. Yeah, I don't know if we'll test
and
Dan.
The catbird, she mentioned the catbird is another good one. The catbird is I like
the catbird. Was last year's bird also because it too was looking, it was on the suet feeder and then it was looking for the jelly dish.
All right.
And as soon as I put the jelly dish out, it was on it.
So you got your stuff out there now, Joan?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Thanks for sharing. Appreciate that.
Okay.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we should remind people, you don't have to, I mean, you don't even go buy that red stuff. It's just sugar and water.
That's I know.
But some people think they have to make it red. They don't have to make it red.
No. Just make it yourself. Super cheap.
Yes. Sugar and water.
Oh, good Lord. He found it. Great crested flycatcher. A lot of folks should be hearing this now in their neighborhood. Yeah, those two sounds, that's 90% of the sounds they make are those two sounds. They're loud, and they'll nest in boxes. They like bigger boxes than the bluebird boxes. I've heard of, I just hung a screech owl box, probably a little late, just a couple of weeks ago, a little late for screech owls to take up residence, maybe for next year. But sometimes great crested flycatchers will nest in those, even though it's a giant box that they'll be rattling around in. But they're a lot of fun. I've heard them nesting in mailboxes.
Mm, wow. Yeah.
They're a cavity nesting flycatcher, which is unusual. None of our other flycatchers are cavity nesters. They're a fun bird. They're beautiful and loud and
can't miss
sort of rampant. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Mark, who's giving us a call from Chilmark. Hi, Mark. Mark, are you there?
One of us is.
Yeah. Mark and Chilmark. Good
morning.
We
got dead air.
Yep. All right. We'll see what we'll figure out what's going on there. All right. Let's.
He's a little too chill.
All right. This is Hannah, who says, in the summer, the hummingbirds really love our pink sweet pepper bushes. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, clethra. Oh, that's one of my favorite plants of all time and a great native that you can get and plant in your yard, especially if you have some wet kind of partial shade. But they can be in a variety of conditions. And it's a really abundant plant around wetlands just naturally occurring. And when sweet pepper bush is blooming in August, mm-hmm. it's just an incredible smell. I mean, it just hits you in the face. It's a gorgeous smell. It's a really important plant for bees, and butterflies love it.
And
I guess stands to reason that hummingbirds would visit that too.
And you want to know what they're doing now, though, right?
Because in spring, once the summer garden is going, there's certainly the best plants are the native honeysuckle vine. People don't necessarily realize there are native honeysuckles, but the coral honeysuckle. Or trumpet honeysuckle, they call it. It's Lonicera sempervirens, I think. And try to get the straight species. They're all different varieties out there, but if you can find the straight species, I think it's actually the best. And they just love it. And you can get two blooms out of it. Mine is starting to bud. The flowers are starting to bud. And then midsummer, you have all kinds of other things you can have going, like bee balm and cardinal flower and stuff that they absolutely love.
Yeah.
But don't get any hybrid cardinal flowers. I just learned this recently. Hybrid plants in general can often have reduced nectar or no nectar.
Interesting.
And so for some reason, they hybridize great blue lobelia with cardinal flower, and they kind of look like cardinal flower, and you can get them at the nurseries, but they have no nectar in them.
Oh, yeah, we want nectar.
Because we had them at the butterfly garden at the sanctuary, and I'm like, geez, cardinal flower. Nobody visits the cardinal flower in the garden, but we have a wild one on one of our trails. The hummingbirds are like forming lines. I mean, they love native cardinal flower.
Yeah.
But don't skip the hybrids. There's nothing there for them. They look pretty, but it's not a real plant.
All right, let's talk to Dave calling from Yarmouthport. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I have a question. We have our Oriole feeder out with the jelly. And on Sunday, it's right outside the kitchen. On Sunday, we're watching, and I see a cardinal land on top. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's not a cardinal. And he was bright red with a yellow beak. And I, for the life of me, couldn't figure out what he was. And
a summer tanager.
Am I right about that?
Yes. Yeah, good work. But, of course, I had to get it in first before you said it. Got to be the smartest guy in the room. I'm the bird guy. But, no, that's awesome. And it's a bird that we get, pretty regularly. I'd call it an uncommon spring and fall migrant. And it's a southern bird. It does not yet breed this far north, although there was a singing male in Brewster a few years ago that just sang away. I don't think he ever found a female. But it's a bird that's been moving north like so many other southeastern birds and probably will eventually breed in Massachusetts. But for now, they're a migrant that you'll get every so often if you bird pretty regularly in the spring on the Cape. The Cape gets more than most places. But yeah, it's a beautiful, it's kind of, all red like a cardinal. It doesn't have the black wings of a scarlet tanager.
Well, that's what I first said to myself, and I said to my wife, actually. I said, I think that might be a scarlet tanager, because I remember seeing it in the book, and I looked it up, and no, I saw the black wings, and then right above it was the summer. I'm like, holy mackerel, I think we'd see something a little rare for here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they have a bigger bill, and I think one of the reasons they have that bigger bill is they're bee specialists. They eat bees and wasps. And,
I read that, yeah.
And a lot, people will send me a picture. Someone recently sent me a picture. Oh, we saw a scarlet tanager. Here it is. And it was eating a bee.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, that was a summer tanager. And then sure enough, you look at the picture and it was, didn't have the black wings.
Yeah.
But really cool birds. Okay. And I've seen them up at the beech forest hanging around the flowering willows in, early May. Just snagging the bees as they're coming into the willow flowers, and then they beat them against a branch.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave, good catch on that. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Thank you very
much. Thanks for sharing. Paul is calling from Sandwich. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. How are we doing?
Great.
I have a robin who's a little peculiar, and I'm curious about it. He likes our feeders, in particular the suet, but at times he also sort of thinks he's a dove, and he mingles around with the doves on the ground, picking up the seeds that are on the ground. I've never seen a robin go after the feeders before.
Hmm.
How unusual is this?
Is it seed, or do you have a suet feeder above there?
A suet feeder, the suet cakes.
Okay. Maybe you said that already. I think I blacked out.
That's okay.
Yeah, no, suet. If there's suet on the ground, a robin will certainly grab that. But you're right. It's not a bird you typically see scratching around under your feeders. They really do two things. They do fruit and they do insects especially insects and worms that they catch on the ground. In the winter, they do a lot of fruit, so you'll see them on your ornamental crab apple or winter berry or whatever. And then in the spring, you see them on your lawns eating worms. And then they go into nesting mode and they'll eat all kinds of insects.
They grab right onto the suet feeder, the little baskets, and just nibble away. It does, just one.
Yeah, it's definitely unusual. You're right.
In
keeping with an insectivorous spring diet, the suet. But you won't see them eating seed. I don't think I've ever seen them eating seed.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Paul, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Okay. All right, John, our pal from the Hyannis Whale Watch. Hi, John.
I had a feeling John was going to call.
Yeah, I was hoping John would call because I have some questions for John. Good morning, John.
Yeah.
Good morning, guys. I was enticed by the leading line on the say whale.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, well, that's what
that was the bait.
We were just saying, now that's, I guess some birders have seen that, but we were wondering, Mark and I was saying, how do you know? I mean, what's the signs it's a say whale? Do you know, John?
Yeah, I do. They're a very enigmatic species for us. They're not here for years at a time, and then in certain years when the food source they like is here, they'll come in large numbers. They often associate around right whales.
Mm. Yeah, because right. They're planktivorous.
The right whales are planktivorous strictly, but our sei whales are baleenopterids, so they have these big throat pouches, and they can fill it with fish, or they can be the utility infielders that they are, and switch up and take advantage of copepods or krill. And that's what we've been seeing them doing in the areas where we've had right whales along patches of copepods. We're getting these incredible looks, third year in a row, that we've had just tremendous numbers of sei whales from Stellwagen Bank all the way down into Cape Cod Bay. Yeah. And when you look at them in the field, their bigger cousin, the finback, and much more common, they have asymmetrical coloring. So the right side of a finback whale's jawline is bright white all the way back to about where the navel would be. And they do have a navel. The sei whales are uniformly countershaded, so they're dark above and light below. But the big thing is when we watch them feed, oftentimes, and we need to keep an eye out on the whale watch for the right whales, we have to avoid them. We see them skin feeding, and in the case of the sei whales, you'll often see them doing the same. They'll get right to the surface and either side lunge, opening their mouths and taking these huge gulps, or they'll just lift their upper jaw or rostrum out and just plow through these concentrations of plankton. And it's really been fun.
Right. Yeah, that's my understanding is that when they're in here, they're planktivorous. Unlike, you know, the fin whales, the minkies, the humpback, they're all eating fish. And then the sei whales, which, you know, are very similar to a fin whale, are not. They're in here in good plankton years. Like last year, they were the most common whale in one of the aerial surveys, which shocked me. They were more common than humpbacks and the fins. And so they're really drawn in by these dense plankton concentrations in years when we have that.
Yeah. So, John, what's it like? I mean, I know we've seen some, I saw some reports of, I saw some video actually of some humpbacks right off of Herring Cove. So humpbacks are here. We've got the right whales. We've got sei whales. We've got minke. It must be kind of fun out there right now.
I love May. It's just so much fun. Yeah, everybody's here. Everybody's hungry. We've still got some winter birds out there, more thick-billed mirrors than I've ever seen.
Not now.
Yeah.
Right now?
Yeah. Out in the bay and on the north side of the north side of Cape Cod Bay, as you get up to the waters just to the west of Race Point. I had 30 the other day. We have some razorbills in by the feeding humpbacks. We've still got a few winter gulls, a few Iceland gulls, and we have one glaucus. And really just a lot of fun, but interesting. It's been a really weird spring. The right whales came, the right whales left, the right whales came back. They brought the sei whales down into the bay. Our first trip, I was out with Pete Dremble was on our first trip, a real good birder. And I think we picked up two razorbills and that was it. And I said, the alcids must be gone. The right whales returned. We had more alcids. We had the mirrors for whatever reason. Just a really strange spring, but that's okay because there's lots of great stuff to see out there.
Yeah, you just never know. You never know what you're going to see.
Right, and so, you know, there's a few winter birds are lingering out there, but the spring birds are in too. So the tern, common terns are back now, and with them the parasitic Jaegers. I saw both of those off ahead of the meadow. I had a spectacular day at head of the meadow the other day. I mean, I was just putting up some plover fencing, and there were at least four species of whales right off the shore. The right whales were skim feeding right off head of the meadow beach in Truro. Terns, Jaegers, Bonaparte's gulls. It was awesome.
Well, that same weekend, we were up at the sanctuary. The next day, we went up to Provincetown, you know, Herring Cove, trying to see some whales, which we did not see. But boy, did we see a ton of red-breasted mergansers.
Yeah.
They are so beautiful.
They're really, really numerous migrant around Race Point and to some extent on the ocean and in the bay. You get hundreds of them at a time, you know, fish-eating, diving ducks, and they're all heading north. You know, the winter ducks are leaving now, right? Mm-hmm. Ducks are good fall through early spring, and then they're gone. By May, you know, it gets harder to see even a bufflehead, as common as they were all winter long. There's only a few left, and then within a couple of weeks, they're gone. So the scoters are leaving. You can see these tight rafts of black ducks on the ocean or the bay right now. You don't even have to look at them. They're going to be black scoters. They just form these tight balls on the water, and sometimes you can hear them. It's a great sound, this kind of mournful whistle. And, you know, there were a couple hundred of those off of Head of the Meadow the other day as well. It's just a great time. It's just the comings and goings of May, right? The spring birds are coming in, and they're kind of clocking in, and the winter birds are clocking out and heading back north to Arctic or subarctic Canada or Alaska to breed.
All right. So, John, if you're coming out in the whale watch, just bundle up. It's a little chilly, but worth it.
Bundle up. It is chilly and well worth it. And I guess the last thing, you're asking for flowers. My first hummingbird came on a miserable day at the very end of April. I looked out my window, and at one of our huge Andromeda bushes, there was a very wet-looking hummingbird trying to get anything it could out of it. Very bad for it.
Yeah.
Me and my son put out the feeder the next day, but that bird never returned. I think he must have just said,
Those little, they're a little bit, they're tough. Those little hummingbirds are tough.
Thanks, John. Thanks for calling it.
You bet.
But the hummingbirds are tougher than people realize. And I think they're probably eating mostly insects when they come in, especially, you know, hummingbird shows up on the Cape in late April. It's nothing flowering.
Right.
You know, the blueberries haven't flowered yet. Bearberry maybe is just starting, you know, but one thing they can do, probably not so much on the Cape, but they will eat sap. And so they've been known to follow sapsuckers. We don't really, you know, we might get a few migrant sapsuckers, yellow-bellied sapsucker, woodpecker, that drills little sap wells in trees. And then they eat the sap and they eat the insects that come to the sap. And hummingbirds, they've documented, will follow them around and also drink the sap.
Smart little guys.
And that's a way to supplement them, their kind of sugar cravings when there's not much blooming flower-wise.
Right.
But a lot of their diet is insects, and I'm sure they're good fly catchers, hummingbirds are, and they're eating little gnats and mosquitoes and things. They can pick spiders out of webs. They can do everything that other birds do, glean little caterpillars off of bark and things like that. They're really versatile, and when they first show up in, you know, kind of cold weather and not much blooming, they're probably, you know, doing a lot of insects really at first, building up their calcium, getting ready to breed.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. John and Orleans will be up after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And John is calling from Orleans. Hi, John. Thanks for holding.
Hi. I'd like to know if this bird could have been anything other than a wild turkey. I was walking about 6:30 at night. I could see very clearly that I spooked a bird. It was in a swamp. It flew up to the top of a very tall pine tree. It looked exactly the size of a turkey, but it was all black. It was huge, and I want to know if it could have been anything other than a wild turkey, and it was just some optical illusion.
Turkey vulture, maybe?
No, you said you flushed it from the ground?
Yeah, correct, in a swamp.
Yeah. No, it was a turkey. I mean, they're dark brown, bad light. You're in a swamp. Probably towards dusk. They love to roost in pines. They roost in trees in general. And every day at the sanctuary there in Wellfleet, or as it gets towards dusk, these turkeys do the improbable. You know, you look at them. They weigh 22 pounds. They don't fly very often. They walk around. And then all of a sudden, they just launch themselves into the air and go crashing into these spindly but tall pitch pines at the sanctuary. And the pines are kind of swaying around, and they're just crashing. and it just seems ridiculous, but that's what they do. They're vulnerable on the ground, so they roost in trees where a coyote's not going to get them. And so that's, you know, certainly what you saw. There's nothing else that big. And the difference between dark brown and black is trivial in bad lighting in a swamp.
Yeah. It's amazing how the lighting can impact what you think mm-hmm. you're seeing. John, thanks for the call. Carl in Acushnet writes, "Hi, my yard is filled with birds due to my feeding them daily. Orioles, hummers recently showed up. The oriole first showed up at 6 p.m. and was feeding at a hummingbird feeder. Now they've moved to the jelly feeder and have been eating suet like crazy. I have goldfinches stacked up like jets waiting to land at Logan, wanting to get a perch on the four-hole feeder. Lots of redwings and grackles, a few catbirds recently. I have flowers and tropical milk feed started, and they will go in the ground this week. May is busting out all over. Hundreds of birds here daily." Wow, Carl's a lucky guy. See what happens when you put a little effort into feeding your birds, right?
Yeah, that's quite a menagerie he's got there.
Marilyn in Chatham says, "I've always had great luck feeding hummingbirds with black and blue salvia. It's an annual, but I've overwintered them in our basement a few times. We had both orchard and Baltimore orioles nesting around our yard last year, and they're back in force along with many catbirds eating jelly and oranges. Last week, I had a great look at a blue-gray gnatcatcher eating insects in an oak tree."
So, very nice. Yes. Yep, yeah, blue-gray gnatcatchers are a migrant, neotropical migrant, coming through right now. They're fun little bird, tiny little bird with a tail that they cock upwards and swing back and forth. They're these skinny little birds, insectivorous birds, and they make a nest that looks like an only slightly bigger hummingbird nest.
Hmm.
It looks just like a hummingbird nest in that it's a little tightly knit thimble decorated with lichens, camouflaged with lichens. It just looks like a bump on a branch, and they're increasing as breeders. It's a fun little bird.
All right, and then we have another email here. This is from Bree and Ethan. It says, "My husband and I have an unusual titmouse that has been making appearances in our West Tisbury yard for a few weeks. It has a large white patch around its eyes that connects around the back of its head, much like the white patch on a chickadee. It doesn't appear to have a tuft. Other than that, all the markings and coloring are normal. Could it be a chick mouse or perhaps a mutation? We're borrowing a nice camera, and we'll try to get a picture next time it comes around." And the answer to the hummingbird question, we've seen one hanging around iVibranium lately. It's a hybrid viburnum, so who knows how much nectar she's getting. She's attracted to the strong scent, at least.
Hmm.
Yeah, we'll have to, I guess, have a picture, right? I mean, that's kind of a hard
question. Yeah, no, I'd like to see a photo. Where is this?
It's in Tisbury.
Purported chick mouse?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where there was one before. Yeah, no, they should have a crest. I mean, if it doesn't have a crest, then... definitely doesn't have a crest, then that rules out, oh, it's a leucistic bird. And chickadees especially are subject to this, where it's just a condition in birds where, for genetic reasons, they don't produce melanin in certain parts of the body. There's different kinds of melanin, and it's complicated. But if you look at enough chickadees, a lot of them will have white on the back or on the head, where other chickadees don't normally have that, and we've been kind of keeping track of that at our banding station at the sanctuary. I haven't seen it as much with titmice, but that could be. But if it doesn't have a crest either, then you start thinking hybrid, you know, potentially. Who knows? I would love to see photos of that bird.
All right. And then Michelle says, "Saw the most amazing thing last Friday evening. A flock of great egrets descended into the trees on the other side of a small pond behind my house in Pocasset. It was close to dusk, but I was able to count at least 30 birds in the flock, and you could hear their croaking as they jockeyed for the best spots before settling in for the night. I have never seen anything like this before around here, and all but one were gone by morning."
Interesting.
Nice sight, though.
Yeah,
huh?
What a great yard sighting. 30 great egrets. That's a big, big, beautiful bird of marshes. And that's a lot for this area. And, you know, they have roosts that they'll use habitually. Like, there are places like Cedar Pond by the Orleans Rotary, mm-hmm. right on Route 6 there. You can sometimes see snowy and great egrets staging there in the evenings before they go off to roost somewhere else. But a one-time roost, that's really
great.
Interesting.
Dottie says, "Early blooming flowering quince is a favorite for hummers. Andromeda also." Thanks for your program. Thanks for that, Dottie.
Those ubiquitous Japanese andromedas that everybody has. I see, don't think I've seen a hummingbird on ours. The bumblebees will visit them, certainly. Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
All right. John in East Dennis wrote kind of a disturbing email. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically he had a neighbor who, he says, shot a chickadee because it was pecking on his newly remodeled home, and they baited over it. You cannot shoot a chickadee.
No.
That's illegal.
It's a violation of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Yeah. It's also not going to make you very popular. I mean, come on, shoot a chickadee?
Yeah, no.
I'll have to get in touch with John and see if he, you know, can give me his neighbor's address and
you'll go talk to
a
him.
List of his fears and his work schedule.
All right, so you got something coming up, the Mass Audubon Birdathon?
Oh, yeah. It's coming up this weekend. So It goes from 6 p.m. Friday to 6 p.m. Saturday. And so we talk about this every year. It's a fundraiser, right, to fund all of the good work we do at Mass Audubon, conserving land, educating children, conserving wildlife. And so birders, you know, it's an excuse to go do just a birding blitz all out, right, for 24 hours. You sleep some, you know, a few hours, and then you get back out there and start going for owls and whippoorwills again. But it's the competition is between all the various sanctuaries around Mass Audubon and to get the most species and also raise the most money. And so I'm, you know, trying to track down birders and, you know, I lost a couple birders to Drumlin Farm Sanctuary, stole a couple of my birders mm-hmm. the last couple of years. And I've done that to them in the past. You know, it's just...
It's competitive.
Right. It's like sports. You know, you're mm-hmm. like, you want to steal away the best players from your rival teams. And
do you
that
have
kind
a good team this year?
I always have a good team, but it's a question of who can do it in any given year. You know, a lot of people are busy this time of year, so I'm still working on the final roster. It's probably due today. I should probably get on that. But it's all about geographic coverage, right? If you want to be one of the few teams that competes for the top honor species-wise, then you find some Berkshire birders, you have some North Shore birders, and some Worcester County birders, Pioneer Valley bird. You know, so you want to... spread it around Bristol mm-hmm. County. You've got to have people in all the key spots like Parker River National Wildlife Refuge, some of the Boston hotspots like Mount Auburn, and certainly we have a lot of Cape Cod coverage. You've got to have someone at Race Point or maybe on a boat, and then, you know, at least one of the islands. You need a team mm-hmm. on at least one of the islands. We have some good Nantucket birders. You know, I feel good about our coverage, but it's just a matter of how much the other teams cheat, you know. We don't cheat, but I assume the other ones do because we haven't won. We've come in second a few times, but
Maybe this will be your year to be first. Right?
Yeah.
All right. So also, you want to talk about the sandhill crane. Where are we seeing sandhill cranes?
Was one of the great recent sightings. Four sandhill cranes came through the Cape, and people were seeing them all over the place. You can't hide a sandhill crane.
No, they're big.
Especially four of them. They were flying. They flew out on the Cape, and then they were seen standing on the crest of a dune by our hawk watcher, Don Manchester, from High Head. He's got these great pictures he showed me. They're just standing on the top of a dune out in the Province Lands Dunes there, these four giant sandhill cranes. And people heard them. Peter Flood saw them go by Race Point. And they were seen at Fort Hill in Eastham. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a rare bird. They breed in Massachusetts now in a couple of places. And they're on the increase in the Northeast. That was just a spectacular sighting. The other thing I want to promote is this month we're doing this show the week before Cape Cod Bird Club, which is mm-hmm. unusual. Usually we're afterwards. And so Cape Cod Bird Club meeting is Monday, May 14th. It's going to be a great talk. Everything you want to know about eBird, the insider's view of eBird, the software, website, app that has really revolutionized birding in the last few years. Incredibly important development for birding, for research, everyone from backyard birders to researchers and everything in between can use eBird to find out where birds are, keep track of your sightings, and just learn all kinds of things and contribute to research. So Marshall's eBird project leader with Cornell Lab of Ornithology, who runs eBird. So he's the guy. And so Cape Cod Bird Club meetings are free. They're open to everybody. It's Monday, May 14th. It's at 7 p.m. at the Cape Cod Museum of Natural History in Brewster. So come check that out. Check out the Bird Club. We do good stuff.
And you can also maybe before the meeting walk the trails there. There's a nice osprey.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
All right. Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. See you next month.
All righty.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.